Good morning. Welcome back to the Broadcast Retirement Network. This is BRN AM for Tuesday, April 30th, 2024. At our top story today, food inflation is down in Q1, but some items are still rising. Joining me now to discuss this and a lot more, David Anderson is an economist and professor at Texas A&M University. David, it is so great to see you. Thanks so much for joining us on the program this morning.
Hey, great to be with you.
Yeah. Did you have a good semester?
It's been a good semester. This semester, I'm lucky I don't have to teach class. So I've spent a lot of time doing a bunch of other work with graduate students, out doing my extension job with farmers and ranchers, really yep. doing a lot of stuff on cattle markets and sort of try to catch up.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate you taking a bit of a break from that work and joining us on the network. And we certainly appreciate your expertise. David, let's catch up on food prices. Where are we? Certainly, we get the numbers from the federal government, but I want to get your interpretation and where do we stand today on food inflation and the cost of food?
Well, you know, costs continue to rise. And, you know, we look at all these different segments and sectors in, the CPI and you know, things like energy. You know, we've had higher fuel prices. That increases the cost of getting stuff from where we produce it to where we consume it. I think the interesting thing on the food front in the CPI is this real difference between what we call food away from home and food at home. So going to a restaurant versus going to the store and cooking it yourself. Particularly, you know, I think we've all seen stories in the news about some fast food places and some really high prices there. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we can see it. We see a widening gap between that. And I think the end result will be, you know, we're going to eat at home more. We'll go to the store yeah. and cook it ourselves if we can remember how.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that because you point to some of the costs, no matter where you live in the country. You know, to your earlier point, restaurants have to ship the food, buy the food, ship the food, the ingredients, I should say, cook the food. They have to attract workers to do that. Some of that, I guess, can be automated. But at the end of the day, if they're paying more for gasoline and fuel, they're going to have to pass off some of those expenses to the consumer. So I guess that begs a question, David. If Americans consume food and cook their own food, Are they going to curb what ingredients they buy? For example, potatoes or milk.
Well, I think we do, and you know, so I'm an economist. I sort of think markets work, and the response to you know when prices go up, what we should see is people buy less, and that's yeah. just sort of demand, you know. And so, yeah, we see that. Well, we do see folks that are. You know, have more of a budget constraint, an income constraint. We shift from more expensive items to less expensive items. And so we certainly see that going on. You know, potatoes might be one of those things we think about as, oh, gosh, you know, maybe I'll save a little money here. But you know, we certainly see that. And I think you point out something also that's interesting as we look at the different items. And so I, you know, I'm a livestock, meat, dairy is where I spend my time, my work. You know, if we dug into the CPI data, the retail prices, we actually see lower prices for dairy products than a year ago. On some of the meat items were above a year ago. And so we've got a lot of underlying supply and demand issues in each one of those markets. But in that case, it's a mixed bag with some lower dairy milk prices and higher other things.
Yeah. And David, you know, this is another issue that's come up is shrinkflation. And is shrinkflation, the way I look at it is rather than pass along higher costs to the consumer, the food producer, the snack maker, shrinks the product in order, provides less at the same cost. I mean, isn't that really what shrinkflation is? And is it a bad thing? So would you rather pay more to get the same or pay the same to get a little less. Am I looking at that right?
Yeah, that's what it is. And so we notice, one of the things we notice is, gosh, the package is smaller. You know, the Snickers bar, the whatever is smaller. And so I think we really see that on more processed food items. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, it's kind of hard to make the orange or apple smaller. It sort of is what it is, you know. A pound of steak's a pound of steak. But so we really see it in more the processed food items, where, quite honestly, a lot of times in the processed food items, the food part, the agricultural product part, is a very small portion of the total cost of the item. Fluctuations in, say, wheat in the loaf of bread can be a very small portion of what you see in the overall item. And so you end up with maybe the same price to you, but the package is smaller. And so, yeah, in effect, we can think, you know, the price is really higher for the same amount, but, you know, your dollar outlay is the same. So you're looking at it right. And that's been a long time strategy by companies to deal with higher costs. And so there's sure nothing new there.
No, I mean, it just makes sense. Either you're going to pass along the greater expense to the consumer, or they're going to get a little less for the same. It kind of cuts both ways. David, last question before we go to commercial break, kind of a tongue-in-cheek question. Do you cringe before you look at that CPI number every month?
No, I kind of look forward to it, because I think we're going to learn something interesting. You know, sometimes it confirms what we already know because of other data sources, or we have some expectations of what it's going to be. I tend to look forward to it with more interest than anything else. And that's probably because I spend most of my time on livestock and meat and dairy, not necessarily focusing so much on that one in anticipation of the report. But, you know, I find it interesting.
And David, I lied. One last question. Do those CPI numbers, when you see them, does that impact how you and your family, what you buy? Because like all of us, we're all in fixed incomes. You know, some of us have higher incomes than others, but does that shape, being that you're an economist, does it shape how you and your family shop and say, well, we're going to maybe buckle back a little bit or pull back a little bit from this, but we're going to go over here? So how do you personally use some of that data, or do you not use some of that data?
Yeah, well, I think that's an interesting view. In a way, you know, the CPI is telling us last month what the average price was. We can compare to the month before or to the year before, because there is some seasonality in these things. You know, it's more, I think that's a really good measure of overall price levels. But when I go to the store, heck, I look at the price of things, and there are times I look at, you know, something, I'll say, you know, I'd really like to buy that, but I refuse to pay that much. I think I'll get this other thing instead. And so, you know, it's really the price item on the thing I'm looking at. And is the value of that commensurate with the price I'm supposed to pay for it? And sometimes I'll just pass on it and buy something else.
Yeah. I just think back as you're describing that, I need to go to a commercial break, but I'll just say, I remember my grandparents, we used to tease them for cutting coupons. I don't know if you remember the old circulars that would have coupons. Oh, yeah. And my cousins and I would just tease my grandparents, you know, about that. But hey, look, they came from the Great Depression. They grew up in an era where money was very scarce. I wonder if we're kind of headed back in that direction, where instead of cutting the coupon, there's a virtual circular that you pull from. David, I want to take a very quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about farming and ranching. We'll tap into David's expertise. You're going to want to stay tuned right here on BRN AM.
Imagine a new television network that will make you richer, healthier, and in control of your financial future. This network is for the policewoman in Nashville, Tennessee, the baker in Dubuque, Iowa, the teacher in Lexington, Kentucky. We want to make the idea of savings and retirement culturally relevant. But what do you see as a defining issue of the midterms? Especially for the smaller businesses. I mean, they are the lifeblood of the American economy. Featuring exclusive interviews, current affairs, and docuseries. 33 years old, you retired early.
The philosophy is money only matters if it helps you live a life that you love.
But you got to start thinking about retirement as soon as you get in.
The Broadcast Retirement Network will drive very high engagement with premium partnerships. So this isn't retirement and savings for your parents or grandparents. This is for all Americans. And we're going to change the way you think about money. Welcome to the next frontier of retirement and savings. This is BRN, the Broadcast Retirement Network.
Well, David, thanks so much for staying with us. Really appreciate you hanging around for our second segment this morning.
Great to be with you.
Yeah, this is fun. And I think, you know, trying to explain economics, and you do this for a living to your undergrad and your graduate students, not always the easiest thing, but you make it sound so simple. So credit to you. Let's talk about cattle ranching. Let's start with cattle ranching. That's well within your expertise. How are things going for our cattle ranchers? Are they paying more for the grain and everything that they feed their livestock? And what does that mean for prices?
Well, on the cattle side of things, we actually have had within recent weeks record all-time high prices for calves and cattle. And it's really the culmination of a number of years of reducing our cattle herd in the U.S. In fact, we have the fewest number of total cattle in the U.S. Since 1951. So, wow. So we've been reducing our herds really due to drought, and also due to kind of an economic reason. We've had, like everybody's seen, higher costs. Cattle ranchers have had higher costs. And we've went through a period of years of low prices. And so the combination of drought and bad economics has led us to fewer cattle, and that's driven the price up. So we've gotten to the point, at least for ranchers, where we're set up for some good years and some profits. And I'd probably say it's about time.
Yeah, I would. Well, from the rancher's perspective, it's about time, right? I mean, they made a lot of sacrifices, and we'll get into this in a few minutes. With farmers, but they've had to, you know, they have to adapt to all these climate conditions and demand. They have to process that into their what they're going to produce year over year.
Yeah. And so we've hit the times where we've got some profitable prices. But you remember, markets work, and profitable prices and rainfall will lead us to expand our herds, increase beef production, and bring prices down.
Yeah. I wonder how that's affecting Americans' tastes. I mean, if prices are up, that means Americans are still buying beef and they want this type of stuff. So I guess maybe the tastes haven't been curbed by the higher prices.
Well, that's to me, as a livestock meat economist, I think one of the most interesting things in 2023 is that we hit record high retail beef prices and consumers continued to buy. And, you know, I think beef's a product that people like. The growth in demand over the last decade in beef has really centered on higher and higher, what I'm going to call USDA quality grade, prime, high choice, and then branded products that really hang themselves on those really high quality grades. So your certified Angus beef, you might see various branded items that advertise, you know, a lot of, you know, a higher tenderness, juiciness, flavor, and USDA's quality grade really hangs on marbling, that intermuscular fat. So when you see a steak with the flakes in the middle of it, you know, the marbling part of it, the more marbling, the higher the grade, which prime. But you know, that fat, you know, I think if people have decided fat tastes good.
And also we've heard from the medical community that not all fat is bad if you do it in moderation, and you need some fat in your diet. Not that you're a medical expert, but that maybe correlates somehow with the demand.
I think a lot of the nutrition medical health research would suggest, you know, the movement away from fat starting in the 70s, that fat was bad, We replaced it with stuff that was actually caused us worse problems. And those natural fats bring a lot of benefits as well. And so I think we've seen a kind of a pendulum swing back. That applies to butter consumption too. Butter consumption is the largest in, you know, decades. But, you know, it's the move away from the more processed to the natural real thing. And there are benefits to that as well.
Yeah, I remember growing up in the 70s and my mom would buy margarine instead of butter. But it turns out maybe those are that's not so good. I know my parents tried hard and so many parents did as well. David, I can't let you go. We need to talk a little bit about farming. How are farmers doing? And I'm particularly interested in smaller farmers. I know the big agro processors, they're going to be fine. You know, they're big. How about the traditional smaller family American farm? How are they doing?
Well, you know, I think it really kind of depends on what crop they produce. And, you know, one of the things we have going on is if we looked at, say, corn and soybeans, which is the, you know, that's the Midwest, the Corn Belt, we actually have lower prices. In fact, we've got the lowest, we've got corn prices that are lower than a five-year average of the last 5 years. One of the things that's helped livestock producers is cheaper feed. And last year we had a record large corn crop, and that's led us to lower corn prices, and that benefits livestock producers, but it's not so good on the crop side of things. And so, you know, certainly farmers face higher costs. And I think interest rates is one of those that we ought to remember. You know, most farmers, small farmers too, borrow money to operate. So higher interest rates lead to, you know, higher costs. At the same time, we've got some lower prices for some of those crops. So I think we'll hear more about a sort of a cost price squeeze in agriculture, particularly on the crop side in coming months.
And David, we talked earlier in the last segment about fuel prices, but corn oftentimes can be used in gas blend. How does that all factor in, you know, taking corn and creating ethanol as an example? How does that factor into supply and demand and impact the small farmer? Because I think that the federal government has suspended, I guess, the summer blend in order to keep fuel prices down. And keeping fuel prices down will certainly help with moving livestock and moving produce. But there's also another impact, and it's to the farmer.
Yeah, so we make ethanol, and in the U.S., we make it out of corn. If you went to Brazil, they make it out of sugarcane. We're really good at growing corn. And in fact, the ethanol boom that really began following the passage of the energy bill in 2005, so really starting in 2006, we had an ethanol production boom. That's been a huge benefit to corn farmers. And, you know, so if we think about a 10% ethanol blend, when you go to the gas pump, you know, one of the things going on is we use more corn and ethanol than anything else. That has been a huge boom on the ag side, on the corn side of agriculture, because it drove up prices for corn, which really hurt livestock producers, but helped corn farmers. But one of the trends that's going on is we're using less gasoline in the U.S. Think about, you know, people are shifting to not just electric cars, but cars that get better mileage, which is a response to high gas prices, which means as we use less gas, we use less ethanol. And so those are really connected. And so as our gas consumption goes down, our ethanol demand goes down also, which hits the price of corn. And so those markets are really connected more so now than really ever before because of that direct connection or linkage to the transportation fuel side of things.
Yeah. Well, David, I mean, I feel like, you know, every time I talk, bring you on the program, I feel like I get an economics lesson. I don't know if you would consider that graduate level or undergraduate level or maybe even high school level, but I find
it. No, that's pretty graduate level stuff, I think.
I find it absolutely fascinating. David, we're going to have to leave it there, but look, we're going to bring you back on the program again very soon. So thanks so much for joining us, and take care of yourself. Have a great rest of the week.
You too. Thanks.
And that wraps up this episode of BRNAM. Have a topic of interest, somebody you think we should talk to, then drop us a line. And don't forget, for all the latest curated news and lifestyle, wellness, finance, tech, so much more, and all in one place, check out today's edition of our daily newsletter, The Morning Pulse. Want to search our archives, check out our latest content, then visit our website. Hey, we're back again tomorrow with another edition of BRN AM. We'll have a very important topic and another special guest. Until then, I'm Jeff Snyder. Stay safe, keep on saving, and don't forget, roll with the changes. Now is your opportunity to co-create content around any topic on the First Lifestyle and Wellness Network. Reach a global audience through our platform and co-own exclusive branded content. All of our programs are available on demand and also as audio-only podcasts, so you can take us on the go. Broadcast Retirement Network, available anytime, anywhere, and on any device.